All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, August 21st, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is partly cloudy and 67 degrees here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off last time? I'm not even sure. I have a show up here that says it was from August 9th, and actually maybe it was. I know it was like 10 days ago. I was gone. Sorry about that. We titled the show Light to Matter, Sound, Frequency, Energy, Vibration, Gratitude, and Brains. We have been taking a look at a lot of different things, but namely how the brain works and how scientists have discovered to turn light into matter, and kind of the different physical makeups of the universe, and applying physics to the different things that we potentially don't understand. There seems to be some great connection between frequency, sound, light, color, and sound that makes up the basics of everything that we know. And as these lunatics in charge are trying to take control of every living object on the planet with their surveillance and control grid, I wanted to kind of tie this into 5G frequencies. We looked at the DARPA Spectrum Collaboration Challenge, where the FCC has been involved. It's where we typically have always had licensed spectrum for different agencies to own their little slice of the pie and be able to broadcast or use it for whatever it was designated for. But now they're talking about taking over that frequency spectrum, which includes microwaves. And we've talked about that many, many times. The microwave spectrum comprises not only microwave ovens. Remember that time when they all laughed at Kelly Conway about surveillance with microwaves? But it's very true. We have Wi-Fi is in the microwave spectrum, 2.4 gigahertz. We have your wireless phones with the 2.4 and the 5.8 gigahertz. We have cell phones in the microwave range as well. And now they are taking other radio spectrums that they are going to apply to things such as 5G. 5G is in the higher gigahertz. I think it was like 23 or 25 gigahertz up there somewhere, 24 gigahertz, 37 to 40 gigahertz. There were a couple more, 48.2 to 50.2 gigahertz, 40.5 to 42.5 gigahertz, 46.9 to 47, 37 to 38, 40 to 40.5. And they are all being designated as slices of this new pie. If you happen to lease one of those frequency spectrums, guess what? I think we saw a long time ago, I think that they had to put them up for auction and they were trying to sell them. And once that happened, they were required to give up their rights, or maybe they bid on some other frequencies. But if you were running a TV station or something in one of those frequencies, you just had to move. Because they're going to give it up to the machine. Now, I've seen a few times, there have been lots of stories talking about 5G. We've been talking about it for a few years now and about how dangerous this is. I had watched a couple of videos last week from a microwave specialist out of the UK Air Force or something back in the 60s. He focused on the microwave spectrum for military purposes, and we've talked a lot about that when we were looking at frequencies and communications, all the way back to the days of Bell Labs, messing around with sending signals, whether they be open or encrypted, to different global locations, and being able to manipulate those frequencies to do things. Microwaves, we discovered there's also a sonic portion of that, and that was some of that voice-to-skull technology. But they can also create heat weapons, and with all this investment going into energy weaponry in the military-industrial complex, we also have the medical-industrial complex with the smart everything, and we have the government-industrial complex with the wanting to surveil everything with smart cities, self-driving cars, brainwaves, and some of the brain initiative sponsored by Obama. And the picture that is being painted is very disturbing to me. I'm starting to see more and more stories written and videos done on YouTube that start really realizing what this all means to us. This is the literal net from the sky that's being dropped upon us. And they'll be able to manipulate and control and injure potentially the masses with some of this new stuff that they are developing. This is going to be the utter command and control system for the globe. Now, we were looking at light, sound, energy, color, vibration, and frequency. I was kind of looking at some of the perspectives of life, death, existence, what makes us what we are. And I came across a story over the weekend that really kind of fit into all of this. And this is why this frequency takeover is so important, because if we are all vibration, color, sound, like an orchestra, I mentioned a few times, don't be the out-of-tune tuba, because that puts discord throughout everything. We had read in one of those stories last week about how gratitude and happiness are higher level vibrations than hate and division, some of the stuff that we are seeing rolling out across the globe. You know, it started internationally. I remember Brandon Turberville used to call them the color revolutions, and now it is happening here. Typically, they've been sponsored by billionaires who want to sow discord, because divided, we don't work together very well. We all hate, hate, hate. And I really think that some of that hate energy is what feeds the machine that we hate so much. We don't really hate it. We shouldn't hate it. We despise. We want to overturn. Because negativity, even when you look down at a biological level, they have proven that negativity affects our biochemical processes within our body. And the more stress that you have in your day, which, trust me, I've been dealing with on a daily basis, the sicker and sicker you feel. You don't tend to bounce back as quickly. And when you are under a lot of stress, you have biochemical functions that happen within your person that affect your mood, your mental state, your physical healing capability, your immune system. I mean, that's all been well documented. And with a higher frequency, when you feel happier, more relaxed, your body works in unison. All your systems become in tune. And when you become in tune, that's when you're at your peak. Well, same thing holds true with society. It is an organism. And as they sow discord, as they put the out of tune note and they implant that, you don't resonate anymore. You don't work in unison. And that's a very dangerous thing. Negative energy can disrupt a lot of things. And I really think that that is the point. Listen to this. As they are fighting now to kind of take over the world and understand biology and splice and dice and create things, scary things in a lab, they're also talking about doing things such as uploading to the machine. We have the cloud that is going to be running the back end of everything. And wouldn't they love to be able to enslave us forever, be able to digitize and encode us, to be able to retain every bit of knowledge, since that's where the real history is in the knowledge that we learn. That's where the secrets are unlocked. You know, they are striving for eternal life and for that great heaven in the sky where you can be reproduced. Someday it's going to be the ghost in the machine, the skin job, and the tin can. Remember that. As a matter of fact, over the last 10 days, our summer in a box, I'm going to call it. My whole summer has just been out a window with my health issues and things, and it's been daily, weekly doctor's appointments. I have another one this afternoon during the eclipse. Hope that's not a bad omen. But we tried to do summer in a box in 10 days. Jam it all in there. And I got to tell you, it was lots of physical activity, which is a good thing. It wasn't a couch potato. But one of the couch potato-y things that I did do this past week and a half was I was able to watch a Terminator movie, Judgment Day, I think it was the second one, which was really good. Must see. But they were talking about skin jobs in there, and I had to laugh because I've mentioned that before. That's also one of the names they use for them in Battlestar Galactica, the new one, skin jobs. And I think those are coming, and I just found a story, which I don't want to really get into that today, but I just found a story today about them with self-healing robots that can heal from a stab wound. It's got to be a little frightening when you consider what the implications of that are. But going back to frequency, 5G dropping the net and having this ability where DARPA's talking about putting the frequency spectrum in the hands of AI to redistribute on the fly different splices and dices of the radio spectrum. Some of this energy weaponry and things that the military is investing in has got to give you pause for a few minutes. So let's listen to this. There's a story that I found yesterday out of futurism.com. This was actually from December 18th, 2013. The physics of death and what happens to your energy. When we die, our energy is redistributed throughout the universe according to the laws of the conservation of energy. And while this should not be confused with our consciousness living forever, our energy continues after we're gone, and it could make death a less scary prospect. Even though it is an inexorable part of life, for many people, death, or at least the thought of ceasing to exist forever, can be a scary thing. And the disturbing things that can happen to the body during decomposition, the process by which cells and tissues begin to break down postmortem, are bad enough. But what if instead of looking at death from a biological perspective, we examine it from the physics standpoint? And more specifically, let's look at how our energy is distributed after we die. Now, we found out the other day that science is saying that photons live forever and light can now be turned into matter. That was an 80-year quest. And a lot of the physics of everything is being unified by some of these theories. Well, let's continue. In life, the human body is comprised of matter and energy. And that energy is both electrical, which are impulses and signals, as well as chemical in the reactions. And the same can be said about plants, which are powered by photosynthesis, a process that allows them to generate energy from sunlight. The process of energy generation is much more complex in humans, though. And remarkably, at any given moment, roughly 20 watts of energy course through your body, enough to power a light bulb. And this energy is acquired in a plethora of ways. Mostly we get it through the consumption of food, which gives us chemical energy. And that chemical energy is then transformed into kinetic energy that is ultimately used to power our muscles. And as we know, through thermodynamics, energy cannot be created nor destroyed. And I've always said that. It simply changes state. The total amount of energy in an isolated system does not, cannot change. And thanks to Einstein, we know that matter and energy are two rungs on the very same ladder. The universe is a whole, as closed, and however, the human bodies and other ecosystems are not closed. They are open systems. We exchange energy with our surroundings, and we can gain energy, although through chemical processes, but we can also lose it by expelling waste or emitting heat. In death, the collection of atoms of which you are composed, which is a universe within the universe, which I said micro is macro, are then repurposed, and we are made of stardust. These atoms and that energy, which originated during the Big Bang, or so they say, will always be around. Therefore, your quote-unquote light, and that is photons live forever, that is the essence of your energy, not to be confused with your actual consciousness, will continue to echo throughout space until the very end of time. If nothing else can assuage some of the fears of death, below is a statement of advice from physicist Aaron Freeman via an NPR interview. If you want a physicist to speak at your funeral, you want that physicist to talk to your family about the conservation of energy so they will understand that your energy has not died. You want the physicist to remind your mother about the law of thermodynamics, that no energy gets created in the universe and none is destroyed, because it is always just here. We want your family to know that all of your energy, every vibration, every BTU of heat, every wave of every particle remains with everyone in this world. And we want the physicist to tell them that amid the energies of the cosmos, you gave as good as you got. And at one point, you'd hope that that physicist would step down from the pulpit and walk to the pews and tell them all that the photons that bounced off your face and all the particles whose paths were interrupted by you, hundreds of trillions of particles that have raced off you, their ways have been changed forever by you just being there. I mean, think about this. This is messed up. This is why I really get kind of freaked out about our government taking control ad nauseum via AI, these radio frequencies, because remember, frequencies control everything. May the physicists let them all know that the photons that bounced off you were also gathered in the particle detectors that were your eyes, and those photons created within you constellations of electromagnetically charged neurons whose energy will go on forever. You can hope that everyone will examine the evidence and satisfy themselves that the science is sound and that they will be comforted to know that your energy is still around. And according to the law of the conservation of energy, not a bit of you is gone. You have just become less orderly. Pretty cool there. So anyway, now let's get to 5G. There was a story, July of 2016. The FCC approved the spectrum for 5G. Federal Communication Commission took action in July of 2016 to spur on the development of faster 5G mobile networks and the transition of traditional landline phone systems. With the 5-0 vote, the commission designated a large block of the spectrum for next-generation wireless broadband services, as well as fixed networks that could supplant current wired broadband. These 5G services would provide improved speeds of up to 100 times faster than delivered by today's 4G networks. I'm going to tell you, being quote-unquote off-grid for the last week and a half, 3G and 4G, all of a sudden out of the blue, seem to be having some issues. I used to be able to get 3G inside. 4G, I always had to go outside, but I wasn't able to get much of a signal at all over the last 10 days, so I don't know what they tweaked. Maybe it was the plasma bombing the atmosphere, but something's definitely going on. The spectrum for this new 5G is in higher bands that are currently used, and that would be the 28 gigahertz, the 37 and 39 gigahertz, and can deliver more data than any of the current networks. By becoming the nation's first to identify high-band spectrum, the United States is ushering in the 5G era of high-capacity, high-speed, and low-latency wireless real-time networks, says FCC Chairman at the time, Tom Wheeler. And we're going to look at some of Tom Wheeler's statements. He actually gets a little manacle in here. 5G testing is in its infancy with major trials expected next year, 2017, and early deployment of 5G services in 2018. And that, what's in the whys of 5G? Industry and consumer groups applauded the agency's move, and this is where a lot of this Internet of Things is going to come in. These new bands will be capable of delivering data at much higher speeds than what is currently available under 4G and LTE. Improving the abilities of consumers to truly capitalize, that is the key phrase, and the transformative power of wireless, says Gary Shapiro, president and CEO of the Consumer Technology Organization, in a statement. In another 5-0 vote, the commission updated regulations to make it easier for telecommunication providers to transition from older telephone networks to newer wireless and internet-based voice services, and data services. In the year 2000, 200 million American homes had traditional phone lines compared to only 73 million. And Americans are increasingly choosing other ways to communicate, including a growing number of voice over internet and wireless connections, blah, 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 blah. All right, so here's a statement of Tom Wheeler, June of 2016. On the first day as chairman, I described the FCC as our nation's quote-unquote optimism agency, which kind of scared me about that quote, was that we saw something yesterday or Friday, or I mean the last show week and a half ago, where they had been talking about higher frequencies being able to promote feelings of happiness. If you remember, I don't remember what those frequencies were, but on his very first day, Tom Wheeler described the FCC as the nation's optimism agency, and they're the ones that are opening up these spectrums to be able to allow different agencies to beam frequencies. So I thought that was kind of a spooky statement. Today's spectrum frontier order is exactly what I had in mind when I made that statement. Our broadband networks, he says, wired and wireless, will define what our world is going to be like, from job creation to education to healthcare to energy and all down the line. These networks will unleash new innovation, making the impossible possible. And that would be 24/7 surveillance by every alphabet agency out there. We have the incredible privilege of helping to shape the connected future. That would be, i.e., our enslavement. And today, we take the most significant steps yet to enable the next generation of wireless connectivity. Fifth generation or 5G connectivity will likely be more than an incremental evolutionary step forward in wireless technology. It promises quantum leaps forward in three key areas. Speed, resembling fiber that are at least 10 times, maybe 100 times faster than the 4G LTE networks, which means they're going to cook us live. Responsiveness of less than 1,000th of a second, real time, which enables real time communication and network capacity multiples of what are available today. Coupling this ultra fast, low latency, high capacity connectivity with almost unlimited processing power of the cloud will enable super fast wireless broadband, smart city energy grids and router systems, immersive education and entertainment, and an unknowable number of innovations, i.e. Skynet. Again, watch the Terminator series. I got to tell you, I just couldn't believe Munchkin got to finally see her very first one, and I think she needs to watch them all because it is a testament to what is coming in the future. In a 5G world, the Internet of Everything, and he mentions that, and I've been telling you guys that's what they called it 10, 15, 20 years ago, was the Internet of Everything, will be fully realized, he says. Everything that can be connected will be connected. Most important, 5G will enable killer applications, yeah, no pun intended, yet to be imagined. And we are already seeing industry gearing up to seize this opportunity. AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, and Verizon are all moving forward with plans to test and develop 5G technologies. For example, last month, before this, Sprint demonstrated 5G connectivity offering speeds of up to 4 gigabits per second at the Copa American Soccer Tournament in Philadelphia. Verizon recently announced the completion of its 5G radio specification, which provides guidelines to test and validate 5G technical components. So I bet you that's why my 3 and 4G don't work. These efforts will help inform the standards process by putting stakes in the ground, and the first commercial deployments are expected in 2020. Without question, 5G is a national priority. I wonder why. The interconnected world of the future will be the results of decisions that we make today. And with today's order, we are repeating the proven formula that made the U.S. the world leader in 4G. One, make spectrum available quickly and in sufficient amounts. Two, encourage and protect innovation driving competition. And three, stay out of the way of market-driven private sector technological development, i.e. let the corporations run the world. Today's order will make the United States the first country in the world to identify and open up vast amounts of high-frequency spectrum for 5G. And the big game changer is that we are using much higher frequency bands than previously thought viable for flexible uses, including mobile. And one of the things we're going to look at is how they are doing that utilizing millimeter wave. And if anyone has looked into millimeter wave before, you will find out it's a military technology, and it's the same technology that they were using in those naked body scanners at the airports. Millimeter wave will be a booster. The ability to use this high-frequency spectrum opens up much bigger chunks of the spectrum, and currently blocks of the licensed low-band spectrum are 5 to 10 megahertz in bandwidth. And with 5G, however, we are looking at blocks of at least 200 megahertz in width. This will allow high-bandwidth networks to carry much more traffic per user, gigabits of throughput instead of just megabits, and we are talking about fiber-like capacities to wireless users. And that, of course, is going to let them do virtual reality in mobile. There was also something that came out after this FCC Wheeler chairman left, and this is the next guy. When was this story from? This was March of 2017. The FCC chief calls to action could push 5G along faster. FCC chairman, and this is the current guy, Ajit Pai, says that the agency will respond to new technologies and services within a year. U.S. FCC chairman Ajit Pai has pledged his agency will respond more quickly to new technology proposals and move that might influence the direction of 5G development around the world. Pai was appointed by Trump in January in his first major public policy address on Wednesday in March. Pai directed the FCC staff to follow a little-known section of the U.S. communication law that says that the agency should decide within a year whether a new technology or service is in the public interest. Going forward, he said, so let's not only get the FDA out of the way, let's get the FCC out of the way as well. If a petition or application is filed with the FCC proposing a new technology or service, we will supply an answer within a year, Pai says in his speech at Carnegie Mellon University, home of AI, where Obama gave his AI speech. And with carriers and equipment vendors racing to test and deploy new 5G mobile technologies over the next few years, regulators are under pressure to act quickly. Europe, China, the U.S., Japan, and South Korea, one of our MAD research labs, each want to lead the next generation of mobile, and regulators in those leading countries often follow each other's leads, says analyst Roger Entner of Recon Analytics. Recon Analytics. Listen to that. We're going to look at Google being a CIA operative as well, and how some of these spy agencies are using some of these new technologies to watch your every single move. A commitment to quick decisions can only help the U.S. in that race. And remember, it is all a race about technology now across the globe. And it will be our undoing in the beginnings of Skynet. The FCC has already opened nearly 11 gigahertz of spectrum in high-frequency millimeter wave bands for use in the 5G mobile services and has signed off on a number of 5G trials, Pai said. And he thinks faster FCC decision-making could help make even higher frequencies, which would be above 95 gigahertz and near that terahertz bandwidth. Remember, terahertz, some scientists out of Los Alamos Laboratory came out and said that at some certain resonant frequencies within terahertz frequency range, it can actually unzip DNA. He favors opening those bands to experimentation and letting companies try out new ideas. Guys, I'm going to tell you that this is not going to be a good decision for human beings if they can zip and unzip DNA at will, a certain frequency. Who's going to say it isn't going to be CRISPR for all, Johnny? And make sure that that new zip and unzip weaponry doesn't get out of hand. Spectrums above 95 gigahertz may be useful for high-speed backhaul connections in places where it is expensive to lay fiber or as an emergency backup in case fiber gets cut by natural disasters like earthquakes or backhoe, like happened recently in Pennsylvania, says Michael Marcus, an independent spectrum technology and policy consultant and former FCC officials. Official. Some companies that want to use it have to wait years for FCC to review their applications. Marcus hopes that Pi's pledge is the start of a major shift at the agency, and the impacts remain to be seen. It is too early to say in a sea of change, says Entner. And like everything in Washington, there are intentions, and then there is the reality of what actually happens. In the speech, Pi has also called for efforts to bring broadband to underserved communities, and that's been going on for quite a number of years now. Though the federal programs like the Universal Service Fund that we pay through the nose for every month on our phone bill and the streamlined regulations of private carriers, he tied that goal to one that he's frequently promoted since joining the agency and now leads a call for Trump's investment in national infrastructure like roads and bridges. If Congress moves forward with major infrastructure packages, broadband should be included. I don't know where that actually ever went to. They were supposed to be laying fiber down to all these different kind of out of the way communities because the poor people in the woods need to be online. And of course, that'll open all kinds of surveillance services that they didn't have before. Anyway, I wanted to see if I could find some of the other stuff that Wheeler had said. Here we go, to live up to its potential. 5G networks must also be secure. Cybersecurity issues need to be addressed. And that is another thing that is coming. Cybersecurity is going to be a part of taking over the Internet of Everything. Cybersecurity issues need to be addressed during the design phase for the entire 5G ecosystem, including devices for the FCC's part. Our policy approach will be to emphasize that the industry must develop and communicate cybersecurity standards. We anticipate that continuous dialogue between the FCC, industry, and standards bodies will stimulate industry development for security framework and the Internet of Things that will evolve to accommodate new functions and security threats. We've learned anything in the generation march toward wireless connectivity. It is that we have always underestimated innovation that would result from new generations of wireless networks. Thank you to all the commission staff who worked to craft this item and shape the next chapter in our wireless future. Dun, dun, dun. Well, our wireless future is not going to be a nice one. The plans for 5G to power the Internet of Things out of quartzcz.com. And this was, where's the date? I hate when they don't put a date. Let's see if we got a date. Nope. This is by Ken Kaplan, editor of IQ. Talk about future wireless networks in a swirling ahead of the mobile world Congress. Enough so that it is sucking many of us into believing that 5G networks could feed all of our internet device needs. And this is that great dangling carrot we've talked about. And by all means, keep loving 4G because it will continue to evolve and become more readily available for many years ahead. But for those intrigued by inceptions, now is the time to tune into industry leaders from around the world as they hammer out the standards for 5G networks, which are projected to switch on around 2020 or sooner if South Korea demonstrates it in 2018 when they host the Winter Olympics. And I know I read Verizon's already been over there experimenting with all kinds of virtual reality and 5G. To evolve beyond 4G, intelligence communications capabilities and processing power will need to be diffused across networks and mobile devices, empowering even the smallest of connected devices to do heavy computational tasks and run rich content and services. That is according to Asha Ketty, General Manager of Mobile Standards for Advanced Technology at Intel, who has attended the Mobile World Congress for the past 4 years and will be speaking on the panel at this year's event. Ketty describes 5G as the first network designed to be scalable, versatile, and energy smart for the hyperconnected Internet of Everything world. Ding! Two mainstream publications that both use the Internet of Everything. I'm telling you guys, I've been watching this, I would have to say probably close to 20 years. They were calling it the Internet of Everything in the very beginning, and that was a term that Cisco had coined, and it is now coming to fruition. This generation network and standards will need to solve a more complex challenge of combining communications and computing together so intelligence is at your fingertips, that is the dashboard, and available to the machines that make up the Internet of Things, says Keddie, who's helping Intel network on technologies designed for the network core, the network edge, across the network, and device layers to enable it. Guys, this, if I went back to work, this is probably where my skills would be best desired. And it's very frightening because this really is what is coming last year. And here are the three players, Cisco, Intel, and Verizon, in a joint wireless network research project, revealed a novel set of neuroscience-based algorithms, ding, ding, and that is using our understanding of the brain to build the big pulsating brain in the sky, to adapt video quality to the demands of the human eye, hinting that future wireless networks will have built-in human intelligence. This is going to be Skynet, guys. This really is putting intelligence into the cloud, letting it run the back end. Watson, good old Watson for president. Looking back, Keddie says that every G is run through about a 10-year cycle before a new generation supersedes it. The 2G network was designed for voice, 3G for voice and data, 4G for broadband internet experiences, and with 5G, we see computing capabilities getting fused with communications everywhere, so trillions of things like wearing devices don't have to worry about computing power because, like the network, they can do any processing that is needed. She did say the 5G networks will bring computer processing to the devices that needed it. And yes, a wearable computing device, ding-a-ling, could connect to other devices. And this could lead to new kinds of experiences, she said. These 5G networks will be faster and a lot smarter. And devices will need to become smarter, too, as they will act as networking nodes. You'll become a node on the network rather than just terminals. Keddie says that is why Intel is working on technologies for core, edge, and access points of these networks such that these required devices will take advantage of the 5G networks. With 5G computing, computing power and information will feel like they are following you around, yes, as well as the surveillance devices. And wearables, smartphones, tablets, and other devices with sensors are location and context aware, and they will work together with applications and services you use. Keddie said that with all of these things working together, they might bring augmented experiences to real life. You might have a meeting with someone on your calendar with a few minutes prior. Your device might share some data about that person by quickly sending you content cached nearby in the cloud. They describe how 5G networks will use separate planes that are overlaid and beneath the network, often utilizing Wi-Fi to ensure energy efficiency while delivering proximity or location-based services tied to your smartphones, your wearables, and other sensing devices. There will be an underlay network with computing and communications, so not everything needs to go through backhaul because lots of these capabilities will be available close to where it is needed. Keddie says that from wearables to internet-connected things such as washing machines, smart meters, traffic cameras, and even trees with tiny sensors could always be transmitting data that could be analyzed quickly to help you make decisions when and where it matters most. And even wireless challenges will then be integrated to help keep devices running, so building energy efficiencies into 5G is less essential, she said. As it's frightening because it is going to be your environmental sensors, your bodily sensors, where they are watching how everything is interacting and being able to assess real-time threats from you and your environment. Nokia Labs leads project to develop next-generation 5G platform as a service for 5G. Nokia Labs, part of the 5G PPP initiative, aims to develop customizable platforms supporting acceleration and flexibility of 5G development. It will transform applications across multiple industry stakeholders. Nokia Bell Labs, and this is the former Bell Labs, was purchased by Nokia, is leading a consortium of industry vendors, operators, IT companies, small and medium-sized enterprise businesses, European academic institutions to build over the next 24 months the next generation platform as a service for the 5G era. The consortium is part of the 5G infrastructure public-private partnership launched in 2014 as an initiative between the European Union and the telecom industry. 5G standards are emerging at a particular time in technology history when the cloud is deeply transforming many industries and services. And as such, innovation has to be a cloud native in order to be successful. And this means adapting a model beyond the current telco infrastructure as a service model, which is a platform as a service model. Such a 5G cloud native platform has two key features. Guys, it's all going to the cloud. An ideal 5G cloud native platform must facilitate building, shipping, and running virtual network functions, applications with telco grade quality in terms of latency, reliability, capacity, and thereby delivering the promise of 5G performance. This is a global takeover. An ideal 5G cloud native platform will combine all sorts of third-party applications, thereby creating more versatile and powerful cloud objects, breaking all the silos between connectivity to humans, robots, and sensors, and computing, which would be AI, machine learning, big data, and video applications. Such a platform does not exist today, but with this platform, the consortium's goal is to realize the vision of adopting this model to optimally support cloud-native 5G systems. The project leader and research manager of Nokia Bell Labs said, the consortium's ambition for developing next generation is to enable developers to collaborate within the 5G ecosystem with operators, vendors, third parties, governments, in order to ignite the new businesses and thereby increasing market scale and improving market economics. Industry and academia players are included in this consortium. Vendors are Nokia Bell Labs from France, maybe France FR, Nokia Illinois, and Atos from the European Union. Operators are BT and Orange, small, medium-sized enterprises, virtual open systems, vertical medium, M2M from France, ONAP from the UK, Milan Bicocca from Italy, Denmark's Tenske Universite, and the IMEC. Bell Labs Nokia has been a major force in participating in 5G research and industry collaboration. It looks at this as an essential stepping stone for service providers seeking to gain the greatest benefits from the carrier cloud as they evolve their networks. Now, they're also launching big time 5G in India. And there's a story here out of ET Economic Times Telecom. 5G deployment in India will happen in line with the global timeline. Did you know that there was a global timeline? I guess there was. This is a global event that is happening. It is not just in this country. And all of the countries are getting on board. And of course, it's going to be so amazing because we are going to use this technology to launch the Internet of Everything. This is globalism dropping a net. They are looking at opening up all kinds of global spectrums. Now, there was a big buy, 5G wireless. I wanted to talk about this for a minute. This was from April of 2017. 5G wireless behind AT&T and Verizon's big buys. 5G technology, despite some fairly breathless hype, is still in its embryonic stages of development, but the pace is quickening globally. The major U.S. carriers are racing to buy up critical spectrum that will be necessary for the realization of 5G's potential, which could include supports for speeds up to a gigabit per second and support for the ever-expanding Internet of Things. AT&T has made two major purchases with that in mind, January of 2017. So the company announced the acquisition for an undisclosed sum of bankrupt wireless backhaul provider Fiber Tower. And just this past week, AT&T said it would spend about $1.6 billion in an all-stock deal to also acquire Straight Path Communications. Reuters report overnight cited a source as saying Verizon might try to top AT&T's bid. So they're all fighting for fiber. And with both of those companies, what they have in common is their extensive spectrum license holdings, particularly in the lower end of what? Oh, the millimeter wave range between 30 and 40 gigahertz. Those frequencies are valuable for high frequency, high density component of 5G, which will provide the largest amount of bandwidth for areas of particularly stiff demand for both in terms of throughput and client density. The high frequency part of 5G isn't all there is to the technology, of course. Like the current generation of wireless, 5G will use lower frequencies with better dilling propagation. We've talked about some of those propagation experiments going on in the upper atmosphere for wide area coverage, and the LTE technology is unlikely to be totally supplanted by 5G. But it is the millimeter wave bands that the carriers are excited over because they are now scrambling for frequency licenses. Nor is AT&T the only one looking to shore up its holdings in the millimeter wave. While Verizon's February purchase of XO Communications was particularly aimed at improving the company's fiber networks, Verizon also acquired the rights to a valuable wireless spectrum for an XO subsidiary named Nextlink Wireless. Another major holder of 5G relevant spectrum in the U.S. isn't a mobile carrier at all. Dish Network has extensive holdings in this area as well and has been public about its plans to play in the 5G space. So while the company has recently, as last year, been noncommittal with its predictions, they were bullish in a February earnings call. They said that there's going to be a really fundamental shift in the wireless technology with 5G. It makes logical sense for us to build a network that is not like the current incumbents have, but with utilizing new technologies. So in other words, we can build a network that is completely an IP network that takes advantage of all of those 5G technologies. Now, I want to look here. Fiber Tower, AT&T to buy Fiber Tower, 4 millimeter wave. They are going to buy it for the 24 gigahertz and 39 gigahertz bands and provide a wireless service to carriers, enterprises, and government entities. Thanks, AT&T. They, of course, haven't lost their Bell Labs roots. Fiber Tower acquisition is set to help AT&T realize their vision for 5G and centralized radio access networks. In urban areas, AT&T plans to deploy remote radio heads linked to central baseband processing units, and these links can then be accomplished with fiber then when it is available. But installing new fiber for every C-RAN deployment would be expensive and often impractical because of zoning and permitting issues and digging up the streets. So we're just going to buy all the dark fiber that's in the ground that was abandoned. What's even more interesting is when you have these central central offices, it makes it very, very easy for government agencies to demand, like we saw in the cell phone industry and back with AT&T in the day, to demand that they are able to put their devices into the network to be able to intercept network traffic. Now, I got to find, I don't know, I have a lot of tabs up, but I had a couple stories here that I supplanted in here and I somehow lost about some of the collaboration that has been going on. How the CIA made Google. Oh, surprise! Inside the secret network behind mass surveillance, endless war, and Skynet part one. And you guys remember me talking about a long time ago, 20 plus years when I was working in the budding tech industry. When Google first hit the scene, they had an interesting tagline. That was, Google is not evil. Well, at the head of this story that I'm about to read by Nasfit Ahmed from Medium.com, there is a big wall, and it looks like it probably was from Google headquarters in Google pretty colors, blue, red, yellow, and green, that says, don't be evil. I think that was from Google. Insurge Intelligence, which is a new crowdfunded investigative journalism project, this was in 2015, breaks the exclusive story on how the United States intelligence community funded, nurtured, and incubated Google as a part of a drive to dominate the world through control of information. Seed funded by the NSA and the CIA, Google was merely the first among a plethora of private sector startups co-opted by U.S. intelligence to retain, quote-unquote, information superiority. The origins of this ingenious strategy trace back to a secret Pentagon-sponsored group, surprise, that for the last two decades has functioned as a bridge between the U.S. government and elites across businesses, industry, finance, corporate, and media sectors. And the group has allowed some of its most powerful special interests in corporate America to systematically circumvent democratic accountability and the rule of law to influence government policies as well as public opinion in the U.S. and around the world. The results have been catastrophic. NSA mass surveillance, a permanent state of global war, and a new initiative to transform the U.S. military into what? Oh-ho, Skynet. Yes, that is exactly what we are dealing with here. This exclusive is being released for free in the public interest, and it was enabled by crowdfunding. This author would like to thank his amazing community of patrons for support, which gave him the opportunity to work on this in-depth investigation. In the wake of Charlie Hebdo attacks in Paris, Western governments are moving fast to legitimize the expanding powers of mass surveillance and controls on the internet, all in the name of fighting terrorism. And look at how far we've come in that now, because now everyone is a terrorist. Everyone who has an opinion needs to be stifled because it's not politically correct anymore to have an opinion. And we are now calling it hate speech. We use terrorism to make everybody scared and then everyone a terrorist, and now it is all hate speech. The U.S. and European politicians have called for to protect NSA-style snooping and to advance the capability to intrude on internet privacy by outlawing encryption. The idea is to establish a telecom partnership, 5G, would unilaterally delete content deemed to be, quote-unquote, fuel hatred and violence in situations considered appropriate. Heated discussions are going on at the government and parliamentary levels to explore cracking down on lawyer-client confidentiality. And would any of this would have done to prevent Charlie Hebdo? No, probably not. But especially given that we already know that terrorists were on the radar of French intelligence for up to a decade. There is little new in the story. The 9/11 atrocity was the first of many terrorist attacks, each succeeded by a dramatic extension of draconian state powers at the expense of civil liberties, backed up with the projection of military force in regions identified as hotspots harboring terrorists. And that's exactly how it went. Yet there is little indication that this tried and tested formula has done anything to reduce the dangers. And remember, it also stepped up that millimeter wave surveillance at airports. If anything, we appear to be locked into a deepening cycle of violence with no clear end in sight. As our governments push to increase powers, insurgents' intelligence has now revealed the vast extent to which U.S. intelligence community is implicated in nurturing the web platforms we know today for the precise purpose of utilizing technology as a mechanism to fight the global information war, quoting Hillary Clinton, I think, as a war to legitimize the powers of the few over the rest of all of us. The linchpin of the story is the corporation that in many ways defines the 21st century with its unobtrusive omnipresence, and that would be Google. Google itself styles as a friendly, funky user interface tech firm that rose to prominence through a combination of skill, luck, and genuine innovation. This is true, but it is merely a fragment of the story. In reality, Google is a smokescreen behind which lurks the U.S. military-industrial complex. That's why I always called it DARPA Google. The inside story of Google's rise, revealed here for the very first time, opens a can of worms that goes beyond Google, unexpectedly shining a light on the existence of a parasitical network driving the evolution of the U.S. national security apparatus and profiting obscenely from its operation. And that would be in the ownership of your data. This shadow network, for the last two decades, U.S. foreign and intelligence strategies have resulted in a global war on terror consisting of prolonged military invasions in the Muslim world and a comprehensive surveillance of civilian populations. These strategies have been incubated, if not dictated, by a secret network inside and beyond the Pentagon, established when under the Clinton administration, ding-a-ling, and consolidated under Bush, and firmly entrenched under Obama. This bipartisan network of mostly neoconservative ideagogues has sealed its dominion inside of the Department of Defense by the dawn of 2015 through the operation of an obscure corporate entity outside of the Pentagon, but run by the Pentagon. In 1999, the CIA created its own venture capitalist firm called InQtel, and we've talked about them before, to fund promising startups that might create technologies useful for intelligence agencies. But the inspiration for InQtel came earlier when the Pentagon set up its own private sector outfit. Known as the Highlands Forum, this private network has created a bridge between the Pentagon and powerful American elites outside of the military since the mid-90s. That's right at the beginning of the tech revolution. Despite changes in civilian administrations, the network around the Highlands Forum has become increasingly successful in dominating U.S. defense policy. Defense giants like Booz Allen Hamilton and Science Application International Corporation are sometimes referred to as the shadow intelligence communities, due to the revolving doors between them and the government and their capacity to simultaneously influence and profit from defense policy. But while these contractors compete for power and money, they also collaborate where it counts. The Highland Forum has for 20 years provided an off-record space for some of the most prominent members of the shadow intelligence community to convene with senior U.S. government officials alongside other leaders in relevant industries. I, the author, first stumbled upon the existence of this network in November 24 when he reported for Vice's Motherboard that the Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel's newly announced Defense Innovation Initiative was really about building Skynet, something like it, or essentially to dominate an emerging area of automated robotic warfare. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. I'm going to try to be live again tomorrow. Everybody, take care.